Hey, listeners, this is William Sterling, and you are listening to the Killer Mediums podcast, where we talk about all your favorite horror tropes and how they manifest across all your favorite mediums of entertainment. We've got a surprise episode today. We are talking pirate horror with the Darklit Sails crew. I'm so excited about this for a thousand reasons that we'll get into in the episode, but we've got some unusual disclaimers for this one before we kick things off. As usual, we talk a little bit of spoilers for the books. We talk a little bit of stuff that you might want to be blind about going into these things. But the bigger disclaimers this time. Disclaimer one, we recorded this episode over a year ago while the project was still coming together. So what that means for your listening experience, while we're going through this, anytime that we talk about potential dates or potential timeframes for things, ignore that. We had no idea what we were talking about. The timeframes got changed 100,000 different times as we worked through this project. Don't worry about the timeframes. If you would like to know when these books are coming out, if you would like to know the general timeframe for everything going on, I'm going to provide links to the Kickstarter all over the place in the show notes, on social media, what have you. Please check the Kickstarter for the actual dates for this project. Second big disclaimer, since we recorded this episode, I actually got brought into the project. I have a book that is going to be included in here called Dead Men's Chests. I am so excited about it, but you will hear me talk about it absolutely zero times throughout the episode because it didn't exist when we talked about this. So that might seem a little bit odd, but that's what's going on there. I am an author on this project, but I do not do any talking here. Kind of as it should be. The focus is all on the guests. So, with all of that said and out of the way, here we go. Let's get spooky. Everybody, how are we doing tonight?
Good.
Doing good.
Great.
Woo! I am so excited to have all of you in the chat here. Full disclosure, this is the first round table I have ever hosted. We're going to start a little bit structured going around the room. We have four different guests with us here. I'm going to give everybody a chance to tell us a little bit about themselves, pitch their book to us a little bit. Starting with M.E. Gray, how are you tonight?
I'm good. Thank you. I'm Emmy Gray. I live in East Texas, and my general theme tends to end up around the Gothic. My book is Waves of Smoke and Salt and is a Gothic twist on the pirate horror theme. It's a retelling of the Greek tragedy of Orpheus and Eurydice. Pirate Queen Fiona Blackheart, captain of the Croydoof, she scours the seas for the love who has been stolen away by sirens during a battle. And she marches into hell to find him, and some crazy stuff happens. But yeah.
Very cool. We are going to dive into all of these so much more in just a minute once we set the stage with who everybody is. But we also have in here Caitlin Marceau. Caitlin, how are you?
I'm good. Thank you so much for having us here today. It's fantastic.
Of course. You and Damien are my first ever repeat guests. So this is extra special.
Awesome.
But tell us a little bit about your book, Caitlin.
So I'm a queer author, Canadian author located in Montreal. My book through the series is called It Bubbles Under the Skin. And it's this weird, odd, strange, sapphic body horror tale that involves someone kind of turning into the ocean itself. So.
Perfect. I love it. Okay. Allison, how are you doing tonight?
Great. Thank you. So I'm Allison Hassan and also a Canadian author from New Brunswick. So my book is Island of the Unclaimed, and it is kind of a dark, grungy, really like historical kind of pirate story of a young girl who basically ends up completely on her own because her brother goes missing. So she has to set out on the high seas to try to find him and ends up finding a lot that she doesn't want to. So that's kind of the basis of what my book is.
Awesome. And then our final guest for the evening is Damien Casey. Damien, how are you?
Hey, I'm good. Thanks for having us all on here, and thanks for letting me come back on after the last time. But yeah, I'm Damian Casey. I write horror comedy mainly, and my book is called The Nine Teeth of the River Styx. It's kind of horror comedy. I tried to do a little less this time with that, tried to make it a little more horror, but it's basically just Dante's Inferno retold with pirates in a way, where they're kind of going through the nine levels of hell. I don't really want to get too much into it because A, I'm not good at like the elevator pitch part of writing, and B, I don't know what else to say.
If I could tell the story in 500 words in a pitch, I would have told the story in 500 words in a pitch, not written an entire novel, right?
Yeah. That's like the back of the book stuff. Like, it's so hard. I just stare at it like,
I will die on the hill that is the hardest part of writing. Like, the book, you breeze through. The edits, what are you thinking? The synopsis? Kill me. Just
it's
end my
so
life.
Hard. It's so hard. I never know what to put. I just stare at, like, I'll like type out something and look at it and go, that doesn't sound good. And then I go back and like backspace it all and go, okay, this sounds still not good.
Yeah.
Well, even with our struggles, we have successfully pitched our books, and they all sound great. I want to spin this off into a question, though, about just the pirate anthology. It's wrong to call it an anthology, though, because it's a series of novels. But it's got the same energy as a themed anthology, right? That Dark Lit Sails is going to be. So from what I understand about this, it is going to be a series of standalone novels, not necessarily built within the same universe, but just running along the same theme as pirates. So listening to all of y'all's pitches about your books, it's clear there's a wide range of stuff going on here, from gothic to body horror to finding lost brothers to the horror comedies, and they're all playing within the same theme. So kind of bringing this down to its core elements for y'all, what needed to be included to be a quote-unquote pirate horror book? What are the core pieces of a pirate book here?
I would say a notable lack of deserts is usually a great way to start.
Yeah.
Yeah. gonna want some water, something not too landlocked. Unless like air pirates, and then I guess throw all of what I said out the window.
That sounds really cool.
The world's a desert. There are only pirate ships that blow through the sky.
And honestly, just like the social mechanics of piracy too, like the swashbuckling, the, you know, taking what you want, no holds barred, the you know, the vicious nature of it too. Cause like, as Caitlin just described, like it could not even be an ocean. It could be in the sky, but like, yeah, you still know it's pirates because of like how they deal with each other and like how they solve problems, I guess.
Yeah. There's such a big element of adventure too, of like exploring the unknown and being in a vast emptiness until you come across something else. That's kind of intriguing about it.
Which, to be fair, could also be a desert. Vast nothingness, exploring it, finding stuff you didn't want to know.
Yeah, I kind of already messed up because some of mine isn't in water. Whoops. Caleb's like, it has to be in water.
It doesn't even have to. Like,
whatever.
Like, I was just joking with it. I'm like running away with like the pirates in the air thing. And I'm like, yeah, desert pirate.
Yeah, well, like, Andrew was like, I don't know if we should say, well, yeah, it's cool. Like, Andrew was like really cool when we first started talking about it. And he was like, pirates can be like in any sense of like pirates. Like, it can be like music pirates, like movie pirates, like you, like literally like media pirates. And I was like, oh, that's kind of a cool concept that somebody could play with. Nobody really did, which I was like, okay, cool. So we're just doing straight up pirates. But yeah, I think like, I don't know. I don't know a lot about pirates, but I just kind of went with like the general stereotypical like idea of what it would be, I guess.
Yeah. And we've all kind of got that tropical setting in our mind first and foremost when we think about pirates. Like, maybe that's, you know, Disney's fault with Pirates of the Caribbean. Or maybe it's just like most pirate stories we hear about, like Blackbeard and all the rest of them, are set, you know, in the Caribbean, on the coast, like very tropical climates. Which brings me to another question. We've got two Canadians in the group writing pirate horror. In
tropical settings. What was that like? I know my upbringing, I lived in North Carolina for a little while. So in high school, that was the teacher's favorite tangent, was to talk about Roanoke disappearing and then to talk about pirates. Like, we've got a dead class, we got to talk about something. So let's just talk about pirates. They're fun. As Canadians, are pirates part of your like upbringing?
Did you want to take it first, Ellie?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. For me, like, I'm in New Brunswick, so Curse of Oak Island is huge around here. It's centered in Nova Scotia, so there's a lot of like treasure culture around here and finding buried treasure, and it's not always about pirates, but it always ends up leading that way because we're so close to the ocean. I know, like, it had a huge influence on me and my story because I live by the ocean, that everything became uncomfortable for my characters because they were constantly coated in salt and their clothes would get stiff and their skin would get stiff. And it's like, that's like the main thing that I learned in school. They're like, yeah, so you understand the ocean, so you know how horrible it would have been for pirates since they don't have baths. And I'm like, oh, that's great. So that's in my story too.
Up in like Quebec, we're not like as obviously close to the ocean, but like we have like the French settler culture here as opposed to like England. Like, that's kind of that's our whole shtick, is the French didn't like the English, but we all are here. So like for a lot of the stories that I grew up with, it was less like pirates and more just like, oh my God, the British are stealing our ships, you know, like that kind of like stories growing up of like, okay, we have like a fleet that's coming with like families and children from France, and oh good God, no, the British, no, the ship is on the way. Oh my God, get here faster. So like for me, it's a lot less like, there's nothing tropical in mine. Like, mine doesn't take place in the Caribbean. Mine's very much like in the middle of the Atlantic, and just like what happens when they stumble upon one of these like French vessels that just never made it to Canada. So
yeah. And as soon as that question left my mouth, I realized how ignorant it was going to make me sound and how like solo nationalist it was going to make me sound.
No!
Darn it. But this is kind of bringing us down an interesting road. So ME, being from East Texas, kind of the same idea. How did your like unique cultural slant kind of fit into your pirate story?
So just to back up just a tiny bit. So yeah. I moved to East Texas in 2019. I've lived a little bit of everywhere. I'm originally from upstate New York. I went to New York City for school, lived in Chicago for a little while, and then Dallas, and now I'm here. But as far as like my pirate concept, like it actually stemmed from the trip that my husband and I took to Northern Ireland for our honeymoon last year. And just being around the you know, Giant's Causeway and Carrickery and like all these like magnificent landscapes that just absolutely take your breath away. And like, there is pirate culture up there, nowhere in East Texas. But it just gave this really beautiful nautical backdrop for that kind of the vibe that I was going for. Whenever Andrew and like Damien actually recommended me like to bring me into the series, which like thank you, Damien, if I haven't already said so, thank you.
You're welcome. It was a good choice. I didn't know what else to say, but you're welcome.
Because like this has just been such a rewarding experience. Like, even we haven't even, you know, finished, you know, putting out the books yet, and I feel like this has already been extremely, you know, a wonderful experience. But yeah, pretty much that trip was a lot of the shtick, and then also really loving, you know, Greek retellings. Like, I really love Greek tragedies. That all kind of slowly developed over time. Like, Damien will know that I did struggle with how I was going to put my concept together for a really long time, because I couldn't really figure out how to mix the adventurous nature and like the open world nature of piracy and like, you know, again, with the swashbuckling and traveling, with Gothic, which tends to be a little bit more claustrophobic, and it's usually in manors and like these, you know, claustrophobic areas where that are pretty contained. So finding the marriage between that was pretty interesting. But yeah.
Well, let's dive into that a little bit more here too. So I had Neil McRobert on a while back talking about Gothic literature, and what that genre really entails. So how did you find that balance? Because I'm interested if you can dive into that without spoiling too much of the book.
Yeah, sure. I called upon one of my Gothic mentors, Stephanie Kemmler, who is the author of Bloodborne and the Blood Mad duology. But she is a big fan of Gothic, and she's super knowledgeable. So I pulled her in. I was like, okay, I've got these pieces, and like, how do I put them together? But as we were talking about like the caves and like the ship itself, being so claustrophobic and a lot of the rigidity that comes with Gothic, like at least in my experience, comes from the roles that the people are put in. It's those rigidity of the expectations. So, like with my character, this is not a spoiler at all, but she, escapes Northern Ireland after murdering her father, and she comes aboard this pirate ship, and suddenly, she goes from one very trapped situation to another. So she very quickly realizes this and is like, ah, oh, shit. And suddenly trying to be the square peg in the round hole, trying to, become something that she never thought she was going to have to. She would have to be ruthless. She would have to continue to be ruthless and maintain this image. So that was one of the things that's pretty much carried on throughout my story. But yeah, definitely the caves and the ship itself, hell itself, which like again is not a spoiler, but yeah, there's a lot of those influences in it.
And then, Damien, we haven't really dove to you for the question yet. Cultural background, cultural influences feeding into your pirate story, maybe flavoring it different than any other pirate stories.
Well, I don't I'm from West Virginia, so like there's not a lot of pirate stuff here. There's surprisingly like a lot of people who are like really into the Viking thing, which I know that's got nothing to do with pirates, but that's so strange. Like it's West Virginia. That's a tangent that I didn't need to go on. Anyway, no, like I don't know. I've never really been like the too super interested in it. Like I like the concept of like pirate horror as a whole. Like I think there's some really cool things to do with it, like the Gothic horror aspects, like the body horror, because when I think of pirates, I think of like a dark, like dusty, grungy ship, kind of. So that kind of just made me like think of like, oh, that's kind of a perfect setting for horror, and it hasn't really been done. And I don't know, just for me, it wasn't really like a cultural thing. It was just kind of like the like challenge, because I don't really have any background in it. So I was like, it'll be fun to kind of do as much research as I can and see what I can do with it and see how I can make this kind of mine, I guess, which was, it was fun for sure.
Okay, so that's a good question then for everybody else. With a pirate themed book, there's a lot of historical facts that you would want to get right, probably. There's a lot of nautical facts you would want to get right. How much did y'all go in and like really research pirate culture before starting to build out your story? Or was it story first and then we'll figure out the pirate, this is going to sound stupid, the piratiness of it later? Maybe Allison, starting with you.
Yeah, I feel like I did a mix of both. I kind of cheated. So my fiance has a history major and he's big into this stuff. So I made him read through everything when I finished. So he was going through being like, this term wouldn't have existed like at that level. So it's not even like my items were wrong. He was going through and nitpicking like my actual verbiage, which was really helpful because it just made it a bit more cohesive, which but like when I started, I was like, I'm just going to look up all the pirate slang so I could figure out how they talked. And my main antagonist, I guess, one of them anyway, is Emmanuel Wynne, who is a French captain. So I have him going in and out of French quite a bit, where like when he gets really aggravated and angry, he like slips back into speaking French, and then he'll come back into like an English pirate slang, and it kind of melds the two. So that's one of the biggest kind of research parts that I did for my story. Yeah. There's a lot of other random Google searches that I was like, what food do they eat? I'm like, how do they shower? Like, how do they bathe? Like, how is that possible? All in that time period. And I'm like, how dirty were the streets of London? Did they smell? Like, just so many questions I was Googling.
Nice. Caitlin?
So it's kind of interesting. I'm almost in the exact, well, not the exact same boat, but like in a similar boat where it's like, I almost cheated in a way. So like mine takes place, despite the fact that it does deal with like a more historical vessel, it actually takes place in present day. That's the entire quandary of it, of like it's 2023, 2022, you know, that kind of like vibe. And then they're just sort of like stuck on this boat, which is like the whole story. But like I had, so I can't, it's kind of interesting. I can't really talk too much about it. But I have another book that isn't horror, that is kind of like a play on like, it's not really a Greek retelling, but it deals with like the Greek sirens, like the big bird singing women. It's called The Four Heartbreaks of Tryphena, and it's like a sapphic comedy romance fantasy thing that, again, I can't talk a lot about. But I had to do an absolute stupid amount of research on that because I was like, wouldn't it be cool if she was like a fisherman and then there's a pirate? So like before the series even got like announced, I had like done a dumb amount of research on like different kind of like boats that there were and like the terms for the boats and like what you would call them. And like none of the story takes place on the water. There's like such minimal amounts in this like comedy romance that actually takes place on the water. So that research was for nothing. And then the pirate thing happened and I'm like, oh, I've got this. Even though it takes place in like the present day, I can refer to all of this needless research I did to mention the vessel they're on, which also doesn't actually come into play too much beyond like being the setting. So I did a lot of research unintentionally for there to show that I did no research almost. Like it's just such a dumb coincidence. But yeah.
Absolutely love how you brought up that you've got another book coming out, and my mind immediately went through a list of like 29 different books that I know you have coming out, and you name dropped another
I
one.
can't talk about this one. It doesn't exist. No one look at it. Just know it's there. And when it comes out in like 2 years, let's all pretend to be surprised.
Yeah, no. I have been practicing my surprise face. How about Emmy? How deep did the research go? I know you've already talked about how you really like the Greek stories. So you had that kind of like background for it already, but building the pirate stuff to weave it into there.
Yeah, so I kind of wrote the story first because I felt like, well, I definitely pulled up resources and like figured out like the time period and what terms I wanted to use and like make sure that they're appropriate for the time period, you know, for whatever I was drawing from. But I definitely took the Scott Lynch approach. So I wrote, oh, I didn't write this, Scott Lynch did. Red Seas Under Red Skies. He has a thing in the beginning. It's like, hey, listen, I just wanted to write a story that had pirates in it. Like, I want to apologize to the entire nautical community that all of my maritime info is minimal at best. And like, that's kind of the approach that I took. But like, you know, winches, sails, like mains, like all that stuff is definitely in there. But like, I didn't go crazy on the nautical research part, mostly because for, I tried to get some perspective on the series as a whole because I had a feeling that there may be some other authors that do dig quite deep into the technicality of the ships that they were going to be on. And I mostly just wanted to be able to have the nautical part of it be a vessel for the story and not necessarily it be the entire focus. So that was kind of my approach with it. Most of my research ended up being with the Irish folklore aspect of it. So, but yeah, not necessarily maritime.
Cool. Damien, research.
So I've been kind of trying to think about how to answer this, and I guess I could say like it was very specific research for my story without giving too much away. Because originally when we started talking about it, I had a completely different idea. I was going to do like pirates and a UFO shows up was going to be my original idea. And then I read Christopher Robertson's, like he already had some stuff. And I was like, hey, let me read it. See like what your feel is on this. And I read his stuff and like his research and like accuracy on it. I went, I am like, holy shit, I am out of my league on this. So I kind of like backed off of some of the ideas I had because I just like realized like I'm not going to be able to do that like that well with the research that I do. So I kind of had to just base it more like on something that I kind of already had ideas about and make my research very specific to that. Yeah. If that makes any sense.
Yeah, it does. And then, of course, I was over here looking to try to make sure I got all of this right. And then you brought him up anyhow. Christopher Robertson is leading off the series with the first book, correct? Okay, everybody's nodding their heads.
I think so, yeah.
I'm going to get the name wrong here of Devil Birds and... Oh, no.
Is it Black Flags and Devil Birds?
Yeah, there it is.
The Black Flags and Devil Birds. And it's got pirates and dinosaurs. So he like doubled up on what he had to research here. But that kind of leads us with the UFOs and the dinosaurs and everything else into a good segue for our Twitter question of the episode. I put this out a little bit earlier asking if anybody had questions for a pirate-themed episode. And Ronaldo Catwaru came back with, ask them what their favorite deep sea monster is. I will give you a pass if the answer is UFOs, Damien. But we got to know if we're dealing with a siren or a kraken type of a person. Also, easy chance to plug in, do any monsters show up in your books that we could be looking out for? So kind of a two-parter here. Favorite deep sea piratey sort of a monster. And then is there any big bad in your book that you could throw out to maybe like entice a reader? Damien, you want to start with you this time?
Yeah, sure. I guess my favorite, I'm not going to say UFOs because I love cryptids, as everybody knows, but I'll say like this, I guess Leviathan counts, like, cause he's just massively a Pleurodon. And I think that's really cool. Like the biblical stuff about it, I think is just really cool. And Leopleurodons are just, they're just a mood. But as far as monsters go in my story, like, yeah, there's like, I kind of tried to make this like my version of like Army of Darkness. And I think I put The Void was a big influence on it. It's because it's very like, there's a lot of body horror and there's a lot of, I don't know how to say it other than saying like body mutilation and make monsters kind of. So okay. There's plenty of monsters in mine.
Body mutilation to make monsters. Sounds like we need to go to Caitlin next.
I'm just going to actually just quickly comment on Damien and say that he is an absolute liar. His clear favorite deep sea creature is Bigfoot in a scuba suit.
Correct.
Oh my God, yes.
He's so full of shit. It's absolutely Sasquatch.
I forgot about that time when
you're on the board.
That's it. That is it.
I was so angry because he's like Leviathan. I'm like, bullshit, you're so not right. not to like comment on someone else's choice. I don't know if I have like a favorite deep sea like monster per se. I mean I obviously love sirens, but they're birds, not so much as like mermaids, although I think like now we kind of convolute them as mermaids, but originally they were like the big birds. Big ridiculous looking birds with human heads. But I kind of like, I love real animals that are just scary as shit. I always forget the name of it. I wrote a story about it and like, Lord help me, I'm blanking on its name, but like the fish that has the light on the end of its head. Angler. I don't know why I'm
what? Anglerfish.
Yes, anglerfish. They're so scary. They're terrifying. I love them. Scariest things. Like giant eels. Like things that are real and like wouldn't actually attack us. But like in horror, if even the smallest thing goes wrong, they could. You know, like I like love that stuff. Like octopi are a nightmare creature. Like they're just absolutely the scariest things in this world because they can like fit into tiny spaces. They're like little aliens with too many legs. Yeah. Anyways. I love them. So that's, yeah. Mine doesn't have a monster in it, though. Not okay. Really.
We are the monster.
Look.
Sorry about that. Allison, favorite monster?
Probably sounds like a cop-out, but mine's probably Kraken. Nice. I just find it so cool, and I've always just liked it. No particular reason. I just have. I think it's probably the weird bird beak aspect of it. That's just my only thought process. It's like a crow. I'm like, ooh, shiny. So that's, I'm like, ooh, I like the Kraken. It's what it is. But yeah, as far as my story goes, there's definitely creatures. I don't want to spoil it. There's something supernatural going on. There's definitely something lurking and other forces at work. And it is explained further in the book, but there's a good section of my book that's just confusion and wondering why things are happening, and it all makes sense in the end, I promise.
Nice.
Yeah.
And I love the way you answered that too, like keeping what you wanted about the book close to your chest. Like, everybody do that, please. don't spoil endings of books. So if I try to lead you there with these questions. Emmy, favorite sea creature?
See, this is really hard. So it's always been sirens for me. And that was obviously like one of the reasons for it being in the book. But I don't know. There's something about, if you've seen Ring of Power or Rings of Power, I think it's like episode one or like within the first couple of episodes where it's this giant sea monster that has taken remnants of other ships like onto its skin, and it uses it to kind of like camouflage and trick other seafarers into thinking that it's another ship, and then they become dinner. So like that's one of the things that I've always just like, for as long as it's been out, I love the concept, and there's just something creepy and very on brand, very gothic about like something hiding in the mist and then suddenly it's just there definitely are monsters in mine. So yeah, as far as like the sirens and stuff, I think that Caitlin, you're really gonna like that. Honestly, like, I'm pretty proud of what I did with the sirens.
Anything that lures men to their death, I will be just a fan of, I'm sure.
Yeah, so, like, there's so much I want to share. But, like, yeah, it's going to be so great. I think that everyone's going to be like, ooh, that's cool.
Okay, so I would like to back out here for just a minute. As far as I'm aware, I think this is the first time that the four of you have like been in a room together talking about this theories together. So like, maybe you've got some questions that have been rolling around in your own heads for a while about the that you wanted to ask the other authors that are in this series with you. So I really want to give y'all the floor here for a minute to just talk to each other. I had Mary Sangiovanni and V. Castro on talking about their alien books a while ago, and that was the best part of that episode, was when I just finally shut the hell up and let them go. So I'm shooting for the same target here. Do y'all have anything you want to ask each other?
I'm trying to like think of how to phrase my question, because it's not like, it's not the most like, okay. Oh, okay. How queer are your books? I guess is just like the gentle way I'll put it. And like, I know some people who are writing like pirate stuff or like historical drama, I'm sorry, pirates, and they want to say like historically accurate, and they want to have like a lot of like cishet relationships, or like none at all. There's like, you know, no element for romance, but like Our Flag Means Death was like such a huge success. And that is like queer pirates is like the best thing in the world. So I just want to know how queer is everyone's book, I suppose.
So I think with mine, it definitely has queer elements to it, but it's not in the sense where like there are active relationships kind of on display, but there are elements and avenues to where like people's identities are kind of shared, and they their like innermost desires and their preferences are kind of shared to the reader, not necessarily to each other. So like, I don't think this is necessarily a spoiler. So I'll share. So one of the elements that I really like about the sirens is that, so I made them women, I made them men, I made them androgynous. And so whomever is looking upon them sees whatever they're attracted to. So, you know, if you are bi, you see both and it's great. If you are, you know, just into women, you know, or just into femmes, then like you only see femme sirens. But if you're ace, then you're in for a bad time. Like it, I'm not gonna lie, like it's rough. So for the absence is that like you see these crazy monsters. And so everyone kind of has a different lens to how they're seeing these creatures. And it kind of digs more into like the eye of the beholder situation. So that's kind of how I did that. But yeah, cause like I, with the way that my characters kind of came together, I really wanted the onus and like the spotlight to be focused on the main, you know, cis couple, just because that's the crux of the story. But I wanted to rewrite the sirens in a way that wasn't like super anti-women, just because like I felt that narrative was kind of tired, and I wanted to do something different with it. So that's how I introduced mine.
I think that's so cool. I love that. I was not brave enough to like really inject a lot into my story, to be completely honest. I know like I had dabbled with it, but there's a situation that could be interpreted that way, and I've just left it up to the reader. I haven't pushed any words to overly describe it or explain it. I really just didn't want to go that deep with this one. There is, however, a lot of gender role heavy kind of tones in my story, where it's centered around this young girl who's now on her own and she has to find her brother. So in doing that, she does have to actually dress up. She ends up like cutting her hair off and she's wearing men's clothing and she's pretending to be a guy to get on this ship, to get over to Nassau, essentially, to try to find her brother and get on the pirate ship that he was on, that she last knew of. So there's a lot of that. There's a little sexism towards women, definitely, but they get what's coming to them in the end. So it's kind of how I played it. But
yes, luring men to their death.
Yeah.
I'm literally going to have to like take a bypass on this question, because I might actually like hit spoilery stuff if I, which sounds like a weird thing to say but for that, but it is.
You're breaking my heart, Damien.
I'll tell you like.
Yeah. Now I need to know.
I'll explain it to you later.
Thank you.
What a tease. Like, oh yeah, I'll tell not the listener who's listening to this podcast right now.
So everybody will know that like, Caitlin will know when they listen to this, and they'll be like, oh, wait, nobody's going to pay that much attention to what I say anyway. Trust me.
No, this is the perfect hook. Readers, now you have to go buy Damien's book so you can know what Caitlin knows.
Exactly.
Yeah, I have a question. So I know with Allison and with Damien, you hit some roadblocks with your story and you ended up going in a pretty different direction, where like your characters kind of like told you the story. But yeah, what got you out of that funk? And like what gave you that second kind of wind of inspiration?
I feel like for me, I got stuck because I was just trying to push. It's like I woke up one day and I looked at my story on the screen and I was like, I'm just retracing the steps of every pirate cliche ever. And I was like, when I was writing it, I didn't even realize, because it's just like Pirates of the Caribbean was my favorite movie growing up. Like, so it played so heavily in my mind, and I didn't even realize it until one day. And then I was like, whoa, I really need to take a step back. So I ended up changing like my main characters completely and their like course of their lives. And what the story was really about. Because really now it's, I mean, originally it was just about finding a lost brother and kind of avenging, or whatever you want to say, just like trying to figure out what happened to him. Whereas now it's a lot more ingrained in, well, where's her brother? But all of a sudden now there's this extra piece of, well, her father went missing too. So there's this like piece of this story where men go to sea and then they start disappearing from her family. So it really ties into sort of that familiar bonds, which I wasn't going that deep originally. And then once I kind of had that aha moment and really turned it around, it flowed a lot better. That and forcing myself to write, because sometimes I just can't. So it's like, even if I got 100 words or 50 words, or even just like punctuated a sentence, I was like, it was progress, and it helped me kind of get that imagination going again.
Yeah, I was like, I hit this weird block where, like I said earlier, I was trying really, really, really hard to make it like, I don't know how to explain it really. I was trying to make it, because at the time I was writing Hot Pink Satanism with Kira. So like I was doing like really like bizarro, oddball comedic stuff about hell. And when I had this idea to do something about hell, I was like, I really want this to be like actual scary hell. Like I want this to be like scary, scary stuff. And I was so like good block where I felt like I was writing out of character. Does that make sense? Like I was writing not in my own voice. Like it didn't match up to how I usually write. So I was struggling really hard with that. And eventually I was like, you know, you can still kind of like, you can still be you, but do it a little differently. Like you don't have to like completely change your writing voice. So once I had like Allison said like that aha moment, I was like, oh, okay, I'm good now. Like then I kind of started figuring it out as I went. I did have to go back and like, I don't know how, I just changed so much stuff, because I was like, okay, I'm getting the hang of this better now, like this weird blending of my voice with something a little more serious. So let me go back and rewrite this in this kind of tone. So once I hit that, it kind of like clicked and I was good to go.
Yeah, I definitely vibe with that. Like I felt like I was losing my voice as a writer so many times during, you know, writing this manuscript, because it's so, it was such a challenge, you know, like how I kind of talked about before. Like suddenly like this isn't my writing. Like and it would I would also like just babble write, you know, just to like get the first draft done. Like they go here, they go here, this happens, that, and then seeing 20 some odd thousand words of babble writing, like that doesn't really make you feel good about yourself whenever you're looking back at it. And it's like, okay, well, where did that come from? But honestly, Damien helped me through a lot of it. Because like he provided feedback and he was like, I really like this and this and this and this. And that gave me a lot of, and also I think Allison, you might have read some of it too. And that support was invaluable. Like, I don't know if there would be a book to talk about if it weren't for y'all. So thank you. But
I think something that's been cool is like, sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt, but something that's been cool about this series is like the group chat, like just all of us knowing each other, like even outside of the group chat, has made it like easier to get feedback on certain things from like people that we like admire and respect and trust, like as other writers and like as friends, just to be like, hey, here's my idea, does this work? And like you can say like, yeah, that actually works. You're like, I don't know, maybe not.
Yeah, totally. Caitlin, I know that you are a mega powerhouse whenever it comes to writing stuff. So I don't know if you'll have an answer to this. You totally are though.
You mean in terms of getting stuck, right? Because like I will die on the hill that is my outline time and again. Like I feel so like, okay, so for a long time I didn't do outlines. So I was like, I'm just gonna write what the wind takes me. And like that is, I think, fantastic for like the people who can do that. I am not that skilled. I can't do that. If I do that, then like, as you called it, like I'll end up with 20,000 words of like babble writing where I'm like, what have I done? Like where are we going with this story? So like I'm the person who will like meticulously outline everything, every decision, every like subplot, I'll like mention, like, if there's going to be dialogue in a scene, I obviously won't like write all the dialogue out, but like if there are like some key notes or key subjects or like really key conversations that I know that they like need to have to like move their character along, not so much the story, but like their character development, I'll like put that down and then I'll like go through the outline and I'll like rewrite it again. And I'll like change little things. And I'll be like, okay, did this scene play out better? No, it didn't. It didn't work at all. Cause like then this change won't happen that I need to happen. So I'll like cut out certain things from the new outline and then like add certain things from the old one, but then like keep a split decision that I decided to throw in like in part two of the outline, you know? And then I'll write it a third time. Like I spend more time writing my outlines than I think I do writing books, because like I find if I have the outline down and complete and just like, I don't want to say it's like bulletproof, but like in my brain it is. So like if I have it that way, then when I get the writing done, I'm not so much like trying to figure out where the story is going or like what my character's trying to tell me, because like they've already said it. We've gone through this together. We've like worked through the muck. They know where they're going. I know where they need to be. So like I find the writing process a lot smoother. Yeah, it saves me time also, because like I could, as evidenced by my long-winded answer, I can ramble. So an outline saves us all time.
Do you ever like, because I know like Emmy and myself, like we have playlists for our stories, and it's like if you listen to it and then you read, especially for me, I find it's like you can tell the vibe. Like, do you ever like add playlists to your outline and like have that detail too?
I want to say yes. I want to be like, yeah. But like, look, I don't talk about it too often. Not because it's like one of those things where like I won't talk about it, but I always feel kind of weird talking about it. But it's like, I have ASD. So like, I get really overly stimulated by certain things. So like, one of the ways that I'll kind of fix that is I'll listen to like ASMR, but not chewing. Cause then I want to rip my face off, but like scratchy sounds or like staticky noise, like that kind of stuff. So like if I had a playlist of stuff like that, it'll be like ear penetration. And people are like, what is happening in this book? So like, I don't really, or like if I do listen to songs, so sometimes I will listen to music. Like there was a song called Swimmers that I had listened to when writing a short story for an anthology of like marijuana themed horror that came out a while ago. But like, again, I'm neurodivergent. So like the playlist was that song for like 33 hours on repeat kind of thing. So like I could include a playlist. No one will want to listen. Mm-hmm. Like no one will like this.
I don't know. I feel like that would improve my journey with reading your book. Like none of that sounds bad to me.
It feels like great. You're just going to hear like scratchy brain noises. Sandstorm, yeah. By Darude. Penetrating ear noises.
So. I kind of want that playlist too.
Yeah.
You don't. I'll make the playlist. I'll put it together for anybody who wants to, you know what I was listening to during the pirate thing. But oh my God, am I going to lose anybody who reads my books? I'm going to like read the book, open the playlist, and then just like quietly return the book, like send it back.
No, that's amazing. Honestly, like link in chat. Oh, I want to hear now. I'm curious. And I feel like, so one of the things that I do and like with my playlist is like, I almost do it like a movie soundtrack where like, you know, this particular song is fitting this particular scene, and that accumulated because I also had days where I just couldn't write to save my life. And I also like hyper fixated on finding music for it instead of writing, which I mean, yay vibes. And also, yeah, yay ADHD. Sometimes you just can't write. but yeah, it's, that's one thing that I do is like I have one song for like every core scene, really. It's not like super itemized, but that's what I would do with your playlist. Like listen for one ASMR thing for every scene.
Yeah, that's like literally it. Draft one was exclusively left ear noises, but on draft two you can really tell she had character growth and she went for the right. Like, mixing it up.
Good combo.
I guess, like, if I answered a question for playlists, I kind of, like, everything I write, I kind of have, like, songs in my head, sort of. Like, I have albums in my head, and, like, I make a lot of music references in my stuff. Like, I'll have, like, someone will say, like, a song title or something, and it can kind of reference back to that song. And, like, especially with my book Coffin Dodger, I did a lot of stuff where, like, chapter titles would tie into a certain song, and that song's lyrics might, like, expand more on what was going on with the character. So I like to do a lot of weird stuff like that. But, like, with this one, I just kind of, I don't really make playlists so much as I listen to music that kind of has the tone that I want to kind of inspire me. So I went back, like, in a time machine and went back to, like, 2009, like, pissed off too much testosterone Damien, who was, like, into hardcore and metal, and, like, found a bunch of, like, old stuff that I liked like that that kind of embodied what I was going for. So, and it, I think that kind of made it a little different than what I usually write to, which is cool. But, yeah, I had the playlist, and I sent it to the group chat, and I think I said, like, good luck to anybody who can get through, like, 10 minutes of this, because I can't. I cannot.
So, all right, I'll jump back in here, because the group chat has been mentioned twice now, and I think it's a good segue to another question that I was hoping to get to at some point. This whole series is being published through Dark Lit Press, who is having just a hell of a time right now. Andrew is doing a great job getting banger of a book after banger of a book after banger of a book put out. Now that y'all have been kind of behind the scenes, seeing kind of how he does things, how the hot dog is made, what does he do and what does this press do that seems to set them above and beyond from an author working with the publisher's perspective? Why are so many people gravitating to this press? So many high talented authors coming here. How did he pull all of you together for a pirate series? Kind of take that however you would like, I guess.
I mean, I worked with him before the pirate series on This Is Where We Talk Things Out. And, like, I can tell you, like, from, so, like, obviously they're different experiences, because, like, It Bubbles Under the Skin is very much one of those, like, it's a piece of a greater thing, as opposed to just, like, a standalone, like, novella that isn't part of, like, a connected series. But in both of these experiences, he's just been, like, just so communicative. He's, like, really great at, like, basically sitting down with the author, at least, again, in my experience on both the novella and, like, the pirate one, and then, like, my debut novel coming out this year with him. Like, he sat down, he's like, okay, what is it that you want to achieve, like, with this book? So, like, the first thing he does is figure out what it is that, like, your goal is. Is it, like, purely artistic merit and you want to make zero sales and that's, like, your goal? And it probably won't be. You'll probably want to have something that, like, is well received, has, like, decent sales, gets, like, eyes on books. Cause, like, I feel like for myself anyways, the hardest part is, like, getting people to notice that I am breathing and have a book out. Cause there's, like, so many fantastic indie authors, and, like, I don't want to say, like, the market is inundated with them, cause that's not, like, an accurate way of putting it, but it's just, there's so many of us. And there's, like, so many talented writers. Like, you could read, like, 50 books a day and you wouldn't get through all the amazing authors that there are out there. So, like, it is kind of hard to get your book seen. And, like, Andrew will sit down and ask what it is that you want to achieve with your book, what his plan is for it. Do you want to change anything about it? What would you want to add? What do you want to change? What do you want to do? Is there anything special you really want to, like, put out with this book? Like, we talked about, well, I can't actually talk about it, but we talked about some really cool stuff for my novel. I got very excited because it was, like, an idea that I wanted, and, like, he's making it happen, which, again, I still can't talk about, but no, I'm screaming. And he just, like, he goes that extra mile. He makes sure that, like, every book that comes out, he is talking about it. He gets people talking about it. He makes sure that your book gets into, like, the right hands. He wants everyone to see your book. He, like, gives e-arcs out, gives actual, like, physical copies. I don't know. He just, like, goes above and beyond. And, like, I think even more than just like his ridiculously good marketing reach is just, he's really nice. He like actively cares that you are happy with the book you have. And he actively cares that like the reading and horror community gets that book and enjoys it and is satisfied. Like he's given out free copies of books to people who just can't afford to get some of like Darkfoot Press's book. He'll just like run into their inbox and be like, yeah, we'll happily send you one. Like, we know you enjoyed this one. Here's a free one from us, you know, keep reading. And he just, I don't know, he just makes it accessible and fun and friendly. I have nothing but good things to say about Andrew, and I can talk all day on him. So I'll let everyone else have a word.
I feel like everything you said is very true for how I've, like, all the experiences I've had working with him. I know, like, there's never been a time where he's made me feel stupid for asking questions. And that's a big thing for me because I just have so many questions all the time. And I'm just, like, genuinely curious and I want to know what's going on. And he's always been very open to being like, hey, no, this is what's up. Or, like, yeah, we're going to do this. And, like, even with the group chat that all of the pirate authors are in, it's very, like, he'll throw an idea out and be like, hey, what do you guys think? And be like, I want to do this. I want to push your books. I want to make them all successful. And it's like really great to see that. And I wanted to work with him because I had a short story published in Slice of Paradise by them. That was a while ago now, but yeah, I was really excited then, even just like getting accepted for that anthology and going through the editing process and all the communication I had with him then on that short story. It was just so positive for me. And he made me feel good about like the acceptance, where it's like, you always feel good about an acceptance, but when you get like extra good vibes, it's just so much better. And I feel like that's what Andrew Darklit like gives off. It's just like extra good. And that's like been my experience so far. And I've really liked it.
Yeah, for sure. So I have the experience where my first interaction with Darklit was whenever I had my Instagram live kind of series thing called Sunday Scaries, and I would get a lot of free like ebooks from, you know, his like subscription thing. Like he would send out e-arcs. So now kind of getting to be on the other side of that, like, because first I was just the recipient, like I would get the emails and like I would be so stoked, and now I'm publishing, you know, with Darklit, and which is just super surreal for me. So yeah, I love this. And but everything, just echoing everything that Caitlin and Allie have said about working with him, he's extremely communicative, very transparent, especially with the behind the scenes stuff. He is, you know, that type of customer service, you know, doesn't really exist, you know, especially in the indie sphere. You know, he talks about like whenever, you know, Caitlin had her book come out and, you know, it was all over Book Talk, and he was in the comments section, like asking questions and like actively engaging with people who were talking about it. Like, to ask that of any publisher is just, they would laugh. really, you know, they would be like, if you want to hire like a third party marketing, like assistant or something like that, then you can do that. But yeah, he does definitely go beyond the extra mile. And it's just so refreshing to see. The amount of faith that he has in his writers just makes it that much more, solid a relationship, and they feel like they have the stability to execute at their highest caliber. And like, I feel like that's why you see all of these talented people coming out of Darklit. And it's not, yeah, there are so many writers, but it's also like attitude reflects leadership. And, you know, you have the freedom to really explore and expand on your ideas because you have this cheerleader in your corner.
I think cheerleader is like a good way of saying it too. Cause like one of the things that like I personally gravitated towards Andrew with when it comes to like how he runs it is, it's not like, cause like some publishers are like, you know, us first, us only kind of like mentality. Like this is the only place for indie horror. And like, don't know, I find that kind of gross. Like, that's just like not like the vibe I love. Whereas like Andrew was like, look at this publisher over there. They're doing amazing things. All of you should get that publisher stuff too. They're fantastic. Look at that writer I don't work with. What amazing. Like, and he's just like always hyping everyone in the community up. So like when you get to work with him and see how like much of a cheerleader he is for like just everyone in the horror community, it's just like so positively overwhelming. Like, yeah, cheerleader, I think, is like the best way you could have phrased it.
His passion about books writing too is just insane. Like, it's way out there, which is great.
Yeah, I think I just kind of agree with what everybody's saying. Like, Andrew's just been like, I've known him for a long time. He was one of the first people that actually kind of like supported me when I started writing indie stuff. Like, he put one of my first books in like his newsletter. Do you remember like when he had just like the newsletter, and it was just like this like news, it was just a newsletter, I don't know what else to say, but it was like I reached out to him and was like, hey, I have this free thing going, would you like want to do that to like put it in the newsletter? And he did, and that was like the first time I ever had like really anybody in the quote-unquote community that was like in any sort of position to help me, like actually help me. So that was kind of, so I've always kind of had like a sort of loyalty to Andrew because of that, because I wouldn't, that book would have not probably got to like the very, very little place that it got if that didn't happen. So yeah, I just, what everybody else said, I'm backing. And I also kind of want to know now how Andrew feels about hot dogs after you mentioned hot dogs.
I would like to formally apologize for how I phrased this question. I'm looking down and I'm recognizing we are getting pretty close to time. So the wrap-up question I want to pitch to everybody, and I'll go ahead and kind of make this a two-parter. Feel free to answer one part of it or both parts of it, or you, whatever feels best for you. We know comps sell books comparisons. So we've talked about your books a little bit, but if you were to compare your books to any other pirate stories out there or horror stories out there, how would you try to sell your book to anybody that's been listening to this and going, yeah, maybe I'll pick one or two of these up, right? It's so-and-so meets so-and-so. And then second part of the question, is there anybody else's book, maybe somebody that's not on here tonight, that you are especially excited for that book? Emmy, do we want to start with you?
Yeah, sorry, I was unmuting. so my formal like comps is pitched as Orpheus and Eurydice meets Dante's Inferno and Pirates of the Caribbean. So those three kind of tangentially, yeah, represent the vibes, I guess. And I forgot the second part of the question. I'm so sorry.
It was anybody else's book that's not on here tonight that you're,
oh my God,
locked in for?
All, but
good answer.
Literally all. Like, there's not a single one that I've wanted to pass on. But Sylvester Barzy's definitely has my attention, where it's talking about like it's the slave ship and then there's a virus and, you know, a whole bunch of nonsense breaks out. Like, I love the direction that he took it. So I'm definitely excited for that one. Allie knows that I've been like, you know, just chomping at the bit for more about her story for like since its inception. So I'm gonna say all, but with a special mention of those two.
Nice. Allison, now that we're talking about you.
Oh no, the spotlight. No, thank you. So mine was formally pitched as a cross of Taboo and the Count of Monte Cristo, which neither are really that piratey or horror-y, but I feel like the mix of dread and just sad, dark times is really kind of what my story is about. So it does get a little gothic too. I mean, if you want to put in Pirates of the Caribbean, that's definitely the vibe when you're on the ship, mixed with those really dark vibes. So it's kind of like a sad story with some supernatural aspects. It was really hard to actually decide my comps, so but that was what I went with. They were definitely a huge I guess, inspiration in the back of my mind while I was writing it, trying to keep those pretty present. But yeah, for who I'm looking forward to, I know Zach has one coming out that I'm really excited for. Zachary Rosenberg. If I mispronounce that, I'm so sorry. but yeah, I'm just so excited for the amount of culture and just depth that he's been talking about infusing into his story. And I mean, he'll be someone that you'll want to talk to because it's just so exciting. And I mean, everyone else is too. I'm so excited. I think Emmy kind of called me out, but I feel like we have very similar vibes. So I feel like our stories are going to go pretty hand in hand, and I'm really excited for hers and just everyone in the group, really. There's just so many friggin' amazing, amazing authors in the group, and even people I never got to hear about before. So I'm really excited to read their work as well.
Nice. Damien?
Yeah, so like if I'm comparing, like I've already, like in the Publishers Weekly thing, it said the Army of Darkness, The Void, and Mad God. And I really feel like that's really pretty accurate to what I'm doing, because I really wanted to make basically the Evil Dead series on a pirate ship. That's kind of what I wanted to do. And I tried to tie in all the elements of all of those, the core three movies anyway. I haven't got to see the new one and I'm bumming about it. Anyway, that's neither here nor there. But I just tried to mix those first three movies, like to kind of have that vibe. And I really, really loved The Void and like The Beyond, where it's like this really like kind of dark version of hell, like this dark journey into it. So I tried to blend a lot of that in. Like the Mad God comparisons were just like, because all of the like creatures and stuff in that, it's got such a very visual, like visually unique like look to it. And I really wanted to have that. And as far as other books, I don't know if anybody's really familiar with the Necroscope series by Brian Lumley. It's like vampires and stuff, but he did this trilogy that was in this dimension that's like all vampires. So I kind of took a lot of stuff from that, like the world building and things like that, and made that into it. But as far as like who's I'm excited for, I'm genuinely like just excited for everybody's, of course. I'm excited about Sylvester's too, because his Return of the Living Dead comparison made me really excited. And Christopher's, of course, with dinosaurs. I don't know. I could ramble on, but I'm excited about everybody's.
Perfect. And Caitlin?
So mine was formally pitched as The Lighthouse, only make it extremely gay. And if it meant the Dark Pictures Man of Medan, like the video game, which I'm so excited. Like, I know, well, I mean, I guess Man of Medan technically has pirates, but it's not like piratey in a way. But like, like I kind of am going for the vibe of like, oh my God, what is happening? What time is it? Where are we? Why is this happening? Like the vibe is like, you can't really trust anything that's going on because everything going on is terrible and you hope it's not happening. So that's sort of like the vibe of the book, which like I'm excited for. I like getting to write about chaos. So this is good to me anyway. And I'm excited for everybody's books. I mean, Christopher Robertson, I need to know how dinosaurs are playing into that. Like, I'm excited for everyone's stories. I'm like, yes, everyone's going to be great and sure, but where are the dinosaurs? Like, what is happening? So like, I think that's the one that I'm like, I don't know if it's like the one I'm most excited about, because like, I don't, like, I'm excited for all of them. But I just, like, I need to know. I can't let this dinosaur thing go. I need to see how it plays out. So that's living rent-free in my head till it comes out.
Good thing it's first.
Right? I know. It's, like, the one relief. It's like, I need to see this.
Well, thank you all again for coming on. This was a lot of fun. And if I wasn't excited enough about this series to start with, I am now. Everybody listening at home, please make sure to support the series when it starts coming out. I don't think Andrew's announced a release day for anything yet.
No.
I think he announced the order. I don't think he's announced the actual drop date, but I'd assume sometime this summer, maybe, possibly, hopefully. But for everybody listening at home, thank you so much for joining us. Don't forget to like or subscribe or weigh anchor on the streaming service of your choice, and we will talk to you next time. Stay spooky.